writer, broadcaster, analyst, magician. Watch him make your point of view disappear. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Toronto Sports Radio, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome to the Jeff Blair Show. We're live on location at the Florida Auto Exchange Stadium in lovely Dunedin, Florida. The Jeff Blair Show brought to you all week by our friends at Scott's Turf Builder. Scott's, it's good out here. We will have Blue Jays baseball at 1 o'clock this afternoon on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, the Houston Astros, in town to face the Blue Jays. And we're very pleased at this time to be joined by the president of the Toronto Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro. Mark, thank you so much for
Jeff,
doing
this. Good to be with you. Thank you.
In our lovely, spacious.
It's rustic. It's charming. You can use a lot of words, but still, as I was walking up the stairs, I was thinking, man, how can you be in a bad mood?
I know.
I mean, it's spring training. The weather's great. Baseball's being played. You know, it's just such a for a baseball fan, this is a special time of year. The smell of that grass, you know, as they just cut it out there, and you know, the wet grass in the morning. If you love the game, then this is a special time of year.
Well, and of course, you spent a lot of time in Winter Haven in the central part of the state, so there's not much difference between this facility and Winter Haven's facility.
Well, I will tell you this. I mean, in about 5 minutes, I was here in November walking the facility, and then being here and seeing it operationally, this is far better than Winter Haven. I mean, Winter Haven was not just locationally, you know, that was really landlocked in the middle. Mm-hmm. It took 20 minutes even to get to a freeway. You know, nothing around, and I called it a little bit. You know, it felt like they were trying to continually build on top of a facility, and they really didn't want us there. I mean, they were happy to see baseball leave there. They never replaced us. Such a different feeling here, where the community, the city, you know, the tradition and the pride mean something, and they clearly feel passionately about having the Blue Jays here.
Yeah, since you brought that up, Mark, we had the mayor on, Mayor of Dunedin, yesterday. She couldn't say a whole lot about the ongoing, but she did kind of indicated there were some kind of deadlines coming up. Obviously, there's the end of the 2017 is the end of the lease here, but there's something in September. There's a non-disclosure that ends in September, and that felt like that might be a bit of a deadline in terms of coming up with some kind of a.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you're dealing with government entities, you know, deadlines are good things because, you know, deals don't tend to get done.
Yeah.
That's why a trade deadline spurs trade conversation. And, you know, human nature is that we procrastinate. We tend to wait until we know we have to get something done. I know, you know, I certainly function that way going through school, and I think everybody else. So deals are the same way. And so I think whether it's a deadline of the lease, whether we provide a deadline of exclusivity that we only have, and I think that's the kind of period that we're contemplating now. At some point, our interest is absolutely and clearly to get a deal done with Dunedin. And I think in the spirit of that, at this moment, we're only talking to Dunedin. I think we've said that to them, and we've upheld that. There will be a moment in time, though, where while we continue to leave the door open, if we can't get some sort of guarantee that a deal is going to get done, we'll have to explore our alternatives as well.
We have Mark Shapiro with us in the booth all hour long. We will take your calls at 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. It's a Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt. We're in Dunedin, Florida. You mentioned deadlines and how deadlines can be a good thing.
Yeah.
Edwin Encarnacion has established, I guess in his mind at least, a deadline of opening day to get an extension done with him. Jose, I think, is completely different, a different situation in some ways. Can you give us an update as much as you can anyhow on where talks are with those two players?
No.
Good. All right, we'll move on.
Yeah,
thanks.
I think
brutally,
you know,
honest.
Yeah. No, I mean,
Brent, you tried. You asked it a different way.
I'll ask it the sideways way, yeah.
No, Stephen confuses. Stephen can work you into it without even realizing you're there, so I'm not going to take a question from Stephen for the rest of the show. That was my deal I made before I come on. No, I mean, listen, let me expand a little and just say this, that, you know, the best way to get a deal done is to not talk about it publicly. You know, as soon as you engage where, you know, people are running to trade rumors and there's a little blurb out there here and a little blurb, and that upsets one party and upsets the other party, you know, we have expressed to both Edwin personally and to Paul Kinzer's representative, you know, how we feel. We both talked, you know, constructively as far as rough outlines of what a deal might look like for us, and we've more importantly expressed how we feel about the player. No decision, whether it be Edwin, Jose, is made in isolation. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're a fan or you're the public, you're tending to look at just this one decision instead of thinking, well, you know, we also have Troy Tulowitzki, we have Russell Martin, we've got, you know, and how do these things all fit together, and where is the club's trajectory, and, you know, how do we maintain our ability to be a championship caliber team? And, you know, those are the questions that, you know, privately we as a baseball operations team have to consider. The easy answers, and I think, you know, this is nothing new, but are that we want to keep those guys and that we're better with those guys, both of them. And because of that, you know, whether they set deadlines, we're never going to stop talking to them. And, you know, the only deadline for me that's meaningful is when, you know, they walk away, if that happens, you know, in free agency. Mm-hmm. Until then, you know, I think our efforts and our desire will be to keep them here. Beyond that, not going to give anything substantively. Yeah. But I think it's just not constructive.
Well, let me ask it one other way, Mark, because I feel compelled to now. But if we get to opening day.
I feel compelled to trick you.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm just going to leave the booth.
It's like two masters going at it.
Edwin's people have let us know that he has an opening day deadline, that's their deadline. And it might not be yours, and it isn't the organization's, but he says it's his. So if we get to opening day and Edwin Encarnacion does not have a contract extension, what should a fan read into that?
I guess the likelihood from their side is that, you know, the conversations will halt, but not be over, but halt during the season and pick back up when the season's over. But there are plenty of times that players have said, you know, I'm not talking. Then there's windows, respectful windows, like an all-star break or something. But what you should expect as a fan is that there will not be public conversation. And a player saying that allows the player to not deal with the distraction of commenting every week on whether or not the contract's being brought up. And it just says, okay, and there still could be things behind the scenes that happen.
I want to ask you, and I know, I understand this will be a tricky one for you to deal with, but, you know, when Paul Beeston was the president of the Blue Jays, he would always suggest that, you know, kind of, if you come, we will build it, right? That if people show up, if the stands are full, if the revenue streams are healthy, then that money will turn around and it'll become payroll at some point. Mm-hmm. That the ownership will see that and they will support the team in a certain way, and the opposite was true as well. You've got a very good looking baseball team here right now. It would be a surprise to a lot of people that this is not a contending team. Interest was stoked last year. You saw what could happen in the fall. I assume you've had a very good off season in terms of sales, and you know if this team contends all year, you're going to. The stadium is going to be more full than not, and TV ratings are going to be through the roof. If that happens, how will that affect the bottom line? You know, in terms of running this team, is there a connection from ownership's point of view in terms of full seats, high TV ratings, and where the payroll parameters are? That's a phrase from the previous administration. Yeah. I'm pulling out, but
so
you know what I mean.
You know, there's two things. One, you know, I would still be able to pull the card on you that I'm relatively new in the job. I mean, I'm less than, you know, 5 months into it. So I'm still learning the relationship with ownership. I think there's no question, based on where our payroll is now, that there's a correlation between our on-field success and the both willingness and desire to invest in the team. Absolutely. I mean, that is evidenced by our team. Never, ever will we hide behind any excuses, but you know, there are a variety of operational parameters that any business deals with, every business. And so there are challenges we deal with and, you know, that I feel like we can manage against, obviously, this year as well, that counteract some of the benefit of the team winning. I mean, those are obvious things. I'm not mentioning them, but I think you know what they are. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I think, you know, I've got nothing but a willingness to support the team, both in building the infrastructure that I think is essential for us to have a sustainable winning team long term. That's evidenced by the investment, you know, in some of the behind the scenes, you know, matters with the team, as well as, you know, the investment in our off season and allowing us to, you know, look, no one ever gets everything they want, but we had the wherewithal to do a lot of things. We had to do some things to make sure we had the right team around the star players that all came back.
How about extending the competitive window with this group, Mark? Like, how much will what happens this year in terms of, you know, not wins and losses, but also the balance sheet, how much will that have to do with a willingness to try and extend the competitive window with the current players?
Well, I think, you know, there's... It will have both a real and dramatic impact on our desire to do it as a front office and recommendation to do it, as well as, you know, ownership's willingness to propel that and invest in that. You know, we've got to see, you know, where we are. And the bottom line is those two things can't be separated. If we win, you know, the revenues will continue to increase. And I think meaningfully, we had incredible 2 months in a postseason that followed that, which demonstrated the upside and the potential of the market. Imagine if you did that for 2 or 3 years, you know, what this could be, the monster this could be. I mean, that's what I imagined when I made the decision to come here. Yeah. So is this that window that we can extend and continue? We'll have to continue to infuse some younger talent to balance, you know, some of the veteran talent on the team. But I think it's possible. And if not, we'll look at different junctures and examine what the decisions are and you know, make recommendations to ownership accordingly.
Mark, philosophically, and I mean in a general sense, not referring specifically to Edwin or Jose, how do you feel about the trend towards opt-out clauses that we're seeing, that we've seen this week?
Yeah, I think that there are instances where they are valuable. They're in some ways they're just another form of a player option, which I think are ridiculous. You'll never see us do a player option. I do think that there are unique circumstances, which probably don't benefit me to discuss
sure.
in depth,
yeah, yeah.
but where I say, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, you know, in this circumstance. Maybe, you know, where a player is contractually, there's not quite the ability to get the length of contract he wants out there, so he gets a contract that the club feels is a good length, and yet he also gets, you know, a counter ability to opt out in a shorter period of time and go back out if he thinks that benefits him. Overall, I would say, you know, probably in 8 out of 10 cases, mm-hmm. I would be against doing it. I definitely think that, you know, there was an overabundance of them this past year.
What's your reaction now that you've seen this team through, what, we've got a couple of weeks left in spring training? Anything surprise you about this team, this organization, now that you've been around?
I think the one thing that I didn't fully appreciate or understand, I'm guessing Ross Cole told you the same thing, so because he and I, you know, mm-hmm. are together and talk a lot, but somehow it hasn't really been written, you know, just how interesting the group of guys are. I mean, mm-hmm. Tulo is the only guy with, like, pedigree on this team. And I when I say pedigree, I mean, like, pure pedigree.
Yep.
So, you know, you go around the diamond, and I guess Smoke does too, but he's a distressed property that, you know, overcame that. And then
yep.
Chris
yep.
Colabello, unbelievable story. Ryan Goins, a guy that was overlooked. Josh Donaldson, a position change guy late in his career that kind of came on and people had, you know, somewhat dismissed. You know, you go around the whole field. Kevin Pillar, obviously, you know, extremely overlooked. Even a guy like Stroh, who was a first rounder, but it's that first rounder that a lot of people said can't do this, can't do that, couldn't mm-hmm. start, you know, a late first rounder. There's that, you know, that chip on the shoulder that the guys talk about, but these guys have a story, and that story to me is grit. That story to me is determination, perseverance. And I was talking to Sean Casey, who's going to be in here next week to visit, you know, just because he's a friend and he's going to spend 4 days in camp, because I love to have him around our guys. He brings such incredible energy.
Mayor.
Yeah.
He's the mayor.
But his energy is just so positive, and he's just a great baseball guy. But, you know, I was telling Sean this exact thing, and he said, hey, Mark, the power when you bring a group of guys together that have that chip on their shoulder, he goes, that's a good circumstance. That's a good situation. So the one thing maybe I had thought about these guys individually, mm-hmm. but I hadn't seen them collectively. To be here is to feel that, and it's pretty impressive, Jeff. It really is.
You know, this was a team that experienced and an organization that experienced success for the first time in a long time last year. And, you know, you talk about these players. You had guys who overachieved. You had guys that were overlooked. It really is an interesting group. Were you interested in seeing how they would respond to success, to a little taste of success? Because it can go two ways with teams, right? Mm-hmm. It can be a unifier. And like I said, my impression of this team is the first day I showed up here, I thought they were ready to play the ninth inning against Kansas City all over again. But it can be a unifier, but it can also lead to the developing of some agendas.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you have success for the first time in a long period of time of that magnitude, it can be a situation where people start to look at what's in it for them and can get more focused on themselves and the team. But that's not how these guys won last year, and I don't think, again, that speaks to the character of what I just talked about. Mm-hmm. So, You know, I don't feel like that's been the case this spring. There's certainly more attention. There are certainly more distractions. Some guys, the younger guys in particular, are going to have to learn how to deal with an additional set of expectations and distractions, and that is a learning process, and that will have a real tangible effect. You know, but one thing I'd like to talk about that I think counters that is John Givens. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about a guy that, you know, goes about his job at a, with a level of consistency, a depth of humility, and a positive attitude that I think, you know, if you look at this team, he is so understated that his contribution often gets overlooked. And I, again, as I look at the things I appreciate more after being here, you know, his steady hand, which is something I did say before, but really his consistency and his humility, his openness to kind of, you know, gather resources wherever they may be, I view to be, you know, a real strength of this team, and I think will counter some of those things mm-hmm. that you're talking about that could be a distraction.
Mark, Jeff and I were talking about this yesterday, that, you know, you've got some different sets of eyes looking at this organization than you've had in the past. You know, and beyond the 40-man roster, especially in terms of players, these aren't guys that you drafted. These aren't guys that you signed. These are the guys that somebody else drafted and someone else signed. And you're seeing them with a different set of eyes than maybe people who were very invested in the fact that they're here.
Yeah.
You know, given that, what beyond the 40-man, what's the state of the organization?
Probably better than I thought from afar, but still in need. But still, you know, you have to accept you traded a lot of guys. So there's no organization in all of Major League Baseball that would trade 14 players and come out of it with the top 10 farm system. That just doesn't happen. So there's a lot of really good things happening here. There's a lot of really there's a lot of players to be excited about, which is remarkable in light of the number of guys who have been traded. You know, they tend to be younger. You know, the upper level guys are like, you know, there's a handful that you know about. I mean, there's Green, there's Offer, there's, you know, there's Dalton if he doesn't make the team, but there's not that many. So, but there are some guys coming that are interesting. You know, we're going to need to figure out that gap, you know, mm-hmm. and how we handle that. And I think, again, there are creative answers, and you operate with a sense of urgency. If you're not doing that in this game, then you're in the wrong business.
I know, you know, there's a lot of other ways to evaluate players, but I would think you've seen some guys in the flesh for the first time this spring.
Yeah.
That, you know, is there anybody that jumps out, you know, when you talk about that group in the minor leagues where it's somebody you saw rather than seeing him as a name on a chart?
Yeah, I think Connor Green probably, you know. You know, I've been impressed watching Dalton Pompey, just athleticism, tools, youth, you know. Maybe, you know, I feel like his ability has probably been dampened by the fact he was rushed so fast to the big leagues. He's a Canadian kid, just like a northern kid in the U.S. that hasn't played a ton outside. You know, he's still a developmental guy. Whether he's in the big leagues or in AAA, he is still developing. But his tools are impressive. You know, Connor Green is a talent. But again, listen, the job of player development is taking talent and working to have those players, you know, achieve their potential mentally, fundamentally, and fundamentally, and physically. And you want to get that done prior to getting to the big leagues. Because one thing is, when you get to the big leagues, you know, you fight to survive. You are not developing. You know, it's a misnomer to think that you can effectively develop players in the big leagues. When you mm-hmm. put a young player in the big leagues, you know, it's a fight or flight. I mean, you're looking to do whatever it takes to survive. And so making an adjustment, the risk that it takes to make adjustments within a delivery and a batting stance, you know, whatever it is, are really tough to have happen at the major league level. So, you know, our jobs are going to be to make sure the players that are close get developed with a strong foundation that when they get here, they can stay here, or as, you know, as much as possible stay here, because sometimes the natural developmental process is to get up here, get exposed to it, understand the adjustment, go back, mm-hmm. make the adjustment in AAA, come back. I mean, sometimes it happens more than once, but, you know, build the foundation that enables them to sustain a major league championship caliber major league career.
Let's go to the phone lines. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. President of the Toronto Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro, in studio, in the booth, along with Jeff Blair and Stephen Brent.
Only funny if you could see us.
Yeah, this is, I'll tell you, this is living large. Jason in Thornhill, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What's up, Jason?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call, and, to Mark, I just wanted to say good morning and say that I was definitely one of the sky is falling negative Nancy's. Jeff took a call or two of mine.
I remember.
I just wanted to say that I think that yourself and Mr. Atkins have really done an impressive job. I couldn't imagine what it was like to come home some of those early nights here. And hopefully you didn't read too much press and listen to too many of Jeff's shows, but, you know.
Well, come on, our show's been pretty fair.
You have.
The host has been fair. I don't know about a lot of the callers. The host has been fair.
Well, you know what? We got to talk Clifton off the bridge every now and then, but that's okay.
Well, that's true.
Yes. But anyway, you know what? I just wanted to start it off on a positive note. Welcome to Toronto.
That's meaningful. I appreciate that.
I also wanted to say I caught a couple of games at Progressive and started to make that a regular visit. And from what I gather, a lot of that you were responsible for. It's a great place to see a game, and hopefully you can bring a little more of that here. And good luck and all the best, and I don't envy your situation with Jose and Edwin. So,
well, listen, you know, a couple things. One, you know, that those there, I mean, the tough nights at the outset, that reaction, I think were just indicative of the passion of the fan base. And, you know, I don't tend to take any of those things personally. I think if you in the great moments, and I've been through some great moments in my career, if you take the praise too seriously, you're setting yourself up for just letting the criticism, you know, crush you. You need to separate your self-esteem, who you are as a person, you know, from, you know, the passion of a fan base, positive or negative. But, you know, that passion is one of the reasons I'm here. So I appreciate that. And, you know, recognize this, success, failure, wins, losses, good runs, bad runs. You know, we are going to care a ton, and we are going to work our tails off to continue to put a winning team for you, for the fans. So, you know, your passion and energy, whether it's directed in a positive way or a way that, you know, asks us to do a better job, I appreciate it either way.
Mark, human nature-wise, though, during that phase, which we'll say is over now.
Phase?
I know. That kind of
or dormant. Dormant or over, I'm not
made
sure.
Made it sound temporary, yeah.
It's up to you whether or not it's dormant or over.
But it wasn't not necessarily up to me.
No, actually, that's true.
Weren't there some moments early on, though, Mark, where you stepped back and said, I haven't done anything yet. You know,
yeah, I haven't packed
my suitcase yet. What have I done to offend you people?
Those were kind of the half humorous, like, you know, what's going on, you know, because I guess, you know, again, I've said that to you privately as we've talked, and I've said it in some of the other interviews I've done. That was the only real reaction or surprise, is like, you know, I haven't yet done anything. I'm just walking in the door. That was tough. But again, I think the more you kind of looked at the circumstance and the situation, it was understandable. The reaction was understandable. And again, to appreciate that as passion directed at wherever, you know, the nature of these businesses are, the passion is easier to direct in one place than just a broad, you know, group of people or a circumstance. How do you express frustration at a circumstance? You can't do it, right?
Yeah.
So you find a polarizing figure, and I was happy to take that. Happy to take that role for a short period of time. Hopefully.
Clifton in Etobicoke, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hello, Clifton.
Good morning, fellas. Did I hear that guy say, Jeff, that sometimes you have to try and talk me off the ledge? That's not me, man.
That guy.
Anyway.
No, I know. That's true. Clifton's concern would be you'd be looking at the ledge and you'd be figuring out, okay, what are the odds? What are the odds here? That's what you're concerned about, is the odds.
Before I go lay down my money. Anyway, Mr. Shapiro. Now,
Mark,
there are those, sir, who believe that Alex Anthopoulos made the David Price trade a year ago because he was in a no-lose situation. He was on his way out, is what I'm trying to say. Now, it was less than an ideal situation. I mean, the Blue Jays was at a 500 record, I think, at the time. Luckily, the Yankees was in catchable range. So it was easy for him to make it then. So I'm asking you, sir, if we are in a similar situation this year, because you guys are just coming in, would that be a trade that you would make?
I mean, it's almost impossible to take hypotheticals like that and give you an answer. I think I would say this to you, regardless of what's been reported, I think that was a good trade in light of the circumstances. I'm not sure how to answer your question without saying You know, you need to be in the circumstance. You need to look at the situation. You need to understand the entire dynamic. You weigh the benefit. You weigh the risk. And you determine, you know, whether or not you make a trade. And I think in light of the history of where the Jays had been, in light of the proximity and closeness and the belief in the talent that was in place, you know, the taking a, you know, a leap to kind of try to ensure you get in postseason for the first time in a long period of time is more than understandable. It's advisable. It's a good trade. And, you know, as an organization, whether Alex is still here, whether I was there then, or whether we're facing the same decision next year, and you know, we will always approach that and we'll understand the repercussions of it and we'll deal with the challenges that it presents on the other side, but enjoy, you know, what it brought on that side as well.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more. Mark Shapiro joining us. It's the Jeff Blair Show, brought to you by Scott's Turf Builder, the home of the Blue Jays, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Right, we're just a few hours away from the Houston Astros and the Toronto Blue Jays at Florida Auto Exchange Stadium. It is the Jeff Blair Show. We are on the scene in Dunedin, brought to you all week by Scott's Turf Builder. Scott's, it's good out here. We have the president of the Toronto Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro, in the booth. Going to get back to the phone lines at 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. But, Mark, I wanted to ask you, your father, Ron, high-profile player agent, had a lot of players. I was lucky enough to be able to deal with him a couple of times because he had some players that I covered when I started writing. And, I, you know, I've often wondered, as the son of a player agent, you must have kind of a unique perspective in some ways of the relationship between ownership, players, general manager, and team. Can you just talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's an unusual one. And I would say this to you, recognize that my dad got into that business pretty far along in my childhood. So for 12 years or so, I was literally just the kid going to, you know, a ton of Oriole games, hanging over the rail for autographs, you know, playing stickball, wiffle ball, you know, worshiping Brooks Robinson and Eddie Murray. And then weird thing happened. All of a sudden, 12, 13 years old, when my dad helps out Brooks Robinson on a issue with a bad deal he signed, not a contract issue, my dad starts representing all the Orioles, and the same guys are walking through my house, you know. And so, you know, one day I'm just kind of idolizing Eddie Murray. The next day I'm having dinner with Eddie Murray, and so that was a bizarre thing. I think the, you know, if I could, you know, summarize the perspective that's given me and how that's impacted me as a baseball executive, it's pretty simple that, you know, I like players. You know, I'm pulling for players. I was around a lot of, I see and observe a lot of front office executives, and you can tend to get negative because of the 2% of the time you're dealing on contractual issues. You can tend to get negative because of how easy the game looks the further away from it you get. Looking at it through the lens of, you know, being around so many great players who really epitomize professionalism and excellence, like Cal Ripken Jr. and Kirby Puckett, and, you know, what they mean to me was that, you know, I recognize just how hard the game is to play. Mm-hmm. I appreciate, you know, how much these guys want to succeed. I pull for these guys to be successful regardless of any contract issues. And, you know, I like players. I tend to take a more positive view that I like guys. I mean, I want to be around them. I like them. I pull for them. And, you know, the contractual piece is just a tiny part of the business that tends to get fixated on because it's an interesting dynamic. But to me, 98% of the time, our interests are 100% aligned. We want them to do as well as they can possibly do and have a championship caliber team and to give them all the things they need to be successful. So I think that's the perspective that I've taken away from being, you know, growing up an agent's son.
Let's go to the phone lines. Joe in Mississauga, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Give me my call, guys.
No problem, Joe. Welcome.
Thank you. So my question is in regards to Aaron Sanchez. 6 years ago, we drafted him in hopes that he'd be the anchor of our rotation. And I never really saw that potential up until last season when he was in the rotation and arguably one of our best starters until he got injured. So this season will be the third season he'll likely start in the bullpen. I'm just wondering, when will we get to realize his potential in the rotation if it's not this season?
So, Joe, you already made that decision. You got him in the bullpen.
Joe's got him in the bullpen.
Okay.
Joe listens to Wilner, I think.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a great question. And again, as I kind of mentioned on some of the contract stuff, no decisions made in isolation. You know, we need to make the best decision for the Toronto Blue Jays, for the team's best chances to win. And factoring that in will be not just Aaron Sanchez, but, you know, the other guys that factor into the mix as well, and the understanding that we need to survive a season, not just come up with five starters on April, you know, 3rd that we'll, you know, begin the season with. So, you know, Aaron is a guy that I think has the capability to start, has had a good spring down here, you know, in a starting role and stretching him out. You know, and we will balance that reality and that potential, because remember, he has never pitched more than 130 innings. So think about that for a minute, Joe. He's never pitched more than 130 innings. So we'll balance that reality with what we need to do to you know, pitch an entire season and be a championship caliber team this year, because there's a sense of urgency. We want to win this year.
I was just going to say, but in addition to entire season, you don't want to run into a Matt Harvey type of situation where your team is near the playoffs.
That would be a mess.
Or in the playoffs, and now you got to make a call on the game.
Right. So that'll be a factor. You know, that'll be one of the factors we consider.
Yeah. One of the other pieces that, you know, factors into that decision is Gavin Floyd, who you guys brought in.
Who's thrown the ball well.
Who's thrown the ball really well. But when you brought him in, you signed him to a major league deal. Was there any conversation, Mark? Did you have to make any, obviously no guarantees, but did you have to say to him, look, we're going to give you, we think you have a shot to make the rotation here? Any of those kind of conversations with a veteran player in order to convince him?
Well, I would say this in relation to this conversation we're having. I learned a long time ago, you always learn painfully, right? You never guarantee anything. So what you guarantee is an opportunity, and that's it. And most players understand, hey, after that, I've got to earn it. The fact remains, though, that Gavin, when he's been healthy, and he hasn't been healthy a lot in the last couple of years, has been productive. So the biggest thing we need to see from him is just health. Can he sustain the health? Because the stuff is there, the weapons are there, and when he's been healthy as a major league pitcher, he's been a good major league starting pitcher.
Chris in Georgetown, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Chris.
Morning, Chris.
My question for Mark is, you've been here for 5 months now, and your predecessor traded about 15 guys away. What do you think of the development system that's here now?
Are you talking about the depth of players or the actual development system, the way players are developed?
And guys that were in place that got the system to a point where he could trade 15 players. I want to know what he thinks of the people that are in place to develop players.
Yeah,
for the next few years.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great things being done in the player development system, and I'm that's one of the reasons I'm excited to be here, is I'm excited to learn from the people down there that are working hard and doing good things. That being said, I don't care where you are, I don't care how productive your system is, if you're not trying to get better every single day, if you're not trying to learn, if you're not thinking about, you know, better ways to do things, you're in the wrong place. So that's, and I don't want to work with you. So, you know, I'm excited to learn from those guys and understand what they're doing. I'm hoping that they're also thinking about learning how they can get better, and how our collective experiences will allow us to build a farm system that gets the most out of the talent. But I would say this to you, that, you know, you need to draft talent first. And so, you know, you look at the productivity of drafts, and obviously there was one draft here that was among the best in baseball where a whole lot of picks were there, and that helps drafts be successful. And, you know, we need to have productive drafts first and then have a development system in place that helps players maximize their potential.
Does your is your ideal player, or your, you know, I'm talking about the draft here, a Mark Shapiro player, a Mark Shapiro pitcher, how much would that differ from an Alex Anthopoulos player or pitcher? You know, is there unique, how many sort of commonalities are there, I guess, be the way I'd look
I don't,
at it.
I mean, that's an impossible question to answer, because I think Alex and I probably didn't get into the point where we, I mean, I think.
But I mean, looking at the players that are there right now, that are in, that have been drafted
again,
that's, in the system.
I think it's probably, we didn't get into enough of those philosophical conversations to understand what the thought process was behind guys. I look at the big league club and I'd say, you know, pretty darn good. You know, the thought given, I think Alex had talked a lot to me and publicly about, you know, that transition for him of what it, you know, what it means to balance collecting talent with building a team. Those are my words, but you know, kind of taking his observations of, you know, where toughness, where character, where being a teammate fits into kind of winning championships. And that's something he talked about really just in the last couple of years, you know, weighting more heavily. That's something I believe strongly in. So, you know, I think, you know, there's an alignment there for
what
sure.
One of the things the Indians did well is they drafted and developed players out of Latin America.
Yeah.
You're a little hamstrung this year in the international, in terms of the international signing pool.
Because
of Guerrero.
Yeah.
And because of losing Ishmael, who's obviously a very strong leader down there.
Right.
But Ishmael, I think, you know, Cruz, who ran Latin America.
Right. But we've got Ross Atkins, who ran Latin America for the Indians,
right,
who's bilingual, who has a long history of playing, who understands the territory. We've got Gil Kim, who was the international scouting director for the Rangers, lived in the Dominican, lived in Venezuela, speaks every dialect of Spanish. You know, Carlos Delgado told me, this guy's unbelievable. He doesn't only speak Spanish. He speaks Dominican, he speaks Puerto Rican,
sure,
he speaks Mexican. So I think we've got a pretty good handle on the international market, which obviously centers on Latin America.
Right.
And, you know, we will build, you know, a strong, you know, international operation moving forward.
That was
and,
my question. That's
with this year maybe being a slight interruption because we can't sign anybody over $300,000.
Mark, will you put money into that Dominican complex? Because, you know, the Jays complex does not stack up with a
so
lot of
the So the Jays complex had money put into it in the last year. You know, it's been renovated. It's actually a solid to good complex.
Okay, because the elite level down there is a whole other thing, right?
It is, but I'm not convinced what that does for you. You know,
right.
I definitely am not a believer in owning land down there, and I'm not convinced, you know, what the elite complex, you know, really does.
Todd in Kingston, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Mr. Shapiro, on behalf of all Jays fans, I want to welcome you to Toronto. And
thanks, Todd.
Thanks for doing what you've done so far. It's been greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
And here's my question to you. So, you know, the big elephant in the room, Jose Bautista and Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously there are two big guys that are under contract till the end of the year. If we don't re-sign them, can we just let them walk? Or because we're going for it this year, it's going to be hard to trade away because we're not going to get the return back for them that they bring to the table right now. So basically what I'm saying is, do we let them walk? And then is that going to be detrimental long-term to the franchise?
Detrimental long term. I guess this. Listen, I don't want to be in a scenario where we're contemplating trading those guys. If we are, we're not where we want to be, and some other really bad things happen. So let's park those thoughts, particularly in the middle of March and spring training, when you're thinking all good things and all indicators are things are going to be going well. If we don't get extensions done and we play out the season, then, you know, it's a pretty simple answer. You know, we entertain extensions again at that window, or we, you know, we look at the draft pick and we take those dollars that we signed and we do something else with those dollars and get a different player. So it's not, you know, again, it's, I know that sounds a little simple, but it's a pretty simple equation. Let's avoid trading those guys because let's win a championship this year. If we don't extend them before the end of the season, then let's try to extend them at the end of the season. And if not, we'll take the draft pick and a whole lot of money and get other players. It's not real complex. And I'm not trying to be cold because, again, I would say the first goal would be to keep those guys and keep those guys here.
In the post-PED era, Mark, there's not a lot of guys kind of in their late 30s, early 40s, and, you know, have had those kind of crazy career arcs that some people did when the PEDs were in vogue. But Jose may be an outlier there. Do you think?
I think we're talking about a group of outliers, right? I mean, we've got, it's not just Jose. It's, you know, Jose, it's Edwin already as well. I mean, players peak at 28. It's, you know, Tulo, it's Russell Martin, you know. So we've got a group of players who, you know, I think we'd be betting that would all be outliers. And they really all are. So it's interesting. And I think that dynamic is something to consider as well.
One of the things we've seen in spring training so far, and I know you and Ross talked about the importance of depth. But when I got here and I saw, you know, Matt Dominguez, Casey Kochman, Daryl Siciliani, I don't know if he can make the team, but man, he's been really impressive.
He has.
I'm looking at Buffalo and I'm thinking there are about four or five guys down there that, in it, you know, you're never going to replace. If Josh Donaldson's hurt, that's not going to work. But, man, there are four or five guys down there that I don't mind seeing out in the field in the seventh or eighth or ninth inning of a game if somebody.
Yeah,
hurt.
I think some of the moves that Ross and our baseball ops staff did that are smaller under the radar, whether it's Biagini as a Rule 5 pick who's been extremely impressive, whether it's Ciliani, which was a small trade, Arnold Leon, who's pitched well, it's a small trade.
Right.
Some of the depth has been one of the unwritten, untalked about positive stories in this spring training. And again, when you are an elite championship caliber team, the replacement level below it is going to be a big drop no matter what. But the level of depth kind of assembled, while it's not, high ceiling prospect, off the charts, is pretty good. And I can see scenarios depending upon how we, orchestrate through the end of spring training where we end up with some players that we feel good about. And we'll have some anxiety over positions like catcher where, it's going to be a drop no matter what happens. So,
but I mean, from talking to John Gibbons, I think it's pretty clear that when you're looking at those replacements, this team's going to score runs. What you want are people at those positions who can play defense and not hurt you and maybe contribute offensively, but by and large kind of keep body and soul together until the regular returns.
Yeah, if the core's together, and I think you saw this last year at different times when guys were hurt, if the core is solid and together, and we do have adequate pitching, which I think Josh Donaldson's quote was the best. We don't need great pitching; we need good pitching. So if we have good pitching, and this team is a very strong defensive team. Obviously, just watching Goins go about it this spring, it's pretty special. I mean, for me, again, I wasn't here last year. You guys saw it all the time. That guy defensively is just—he's special to watch.
Yeah, he is.
And so up the middle, we are probably as good a team as any team in baseball up the middle.
Can't disagree with that, Mark. We're going to let you run. Appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much.
Yeah,
it's
great to be with you guys. We'll look forward to doing it again, either opening day or back in Toronto.
Anytime. Okay. Enjoy the rest of spring training.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Jeff.
Mark Shapiro, president of the Toronto Blue Jays, and we'll be back with more of the Jeff Blair Show, brought to you all week by Scott's Turf Builder. The home of the Blue Jays, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.